Welcome back, everyone. It's a new episode of Who's Editing, the thought experiment in which my guest and I appoint ourselves editors of a comic book line at DC Comics. But the joke's on us because we can only use the characters of a specific issue of Who's Who, and in fact must use them. I'm Siskoid, and I'll let you in on all the rules, but first, my guest with which to create a line of books based on Who's Who Update 87, number 5. It's his first time on the show, but a good friend to the Fire and Water Podcast Network, Captain Entropy. Welcome to the show, Cap.
Thank you, Siskoid. I've never been at an editorial meeting before.
Have you not? I think I have. Well, I've been an editor-in-chief of a student paper, so I guess
there you go.
That really counts. Yeah. I hope you didn't find it too difficult because I think the updates are a little tougher in a way.
They are tougher because a lot of the characters are not the main characters. It's the ones they forgot about, so they're automatically more obscure. But that also gives you more freedom, right? I'm not as... Like, there are characters in here I'd never heard of and therefore felt no obligation to do something related to who they originally were. So... That forced me to be a little more imaginative than I might have been, although you might not find what I'm doing imaginative at all. It was a little difficult to get going, but like everybody else says, once I got going, it just sort of rolled out, and I thought about it for the last week, and then I got up this morning and typed it all up and in a mad rush.
This morning, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I usually do it in one sitting. You know, I did it earlier this week. There are still some challenges here. I think there are a lot of teams that we don't usually have that. Like you said, there aren't any big names. Not really. Well, there's one big name. A lot of these people either started out as villains or became villains. It skews darker per capita, I feel. And there's also an imbalance between male and female characters in here. Like I wound up, my team books or my ensemble books have a lot of female characters, but I don't have any female characters who have their own series, solo series, as a result. And I tried to, it just didn't work with my concepts to have some of these male characters be female characters instead.
Yeah, I was able to do some gender switching with my concept, had the same issue.
So here are the rules each episode of Who's Editing go by. Our line of books must include a monthly series for every hero character or team featured, as well as any location, if and only if they didn't already get an entry in the main volume and therefore coverage on this show. But one of these revised entries can be added to our roster, and we give a villain or other entry a shot as well if we absolutely feel the need to. But of course, we can only name a single villain from the issue to receive that honor. So imagine we're coming back from some crisis or other so we can reboot characters or use any continuity's version. It's really up to us. Titles don't have to match the entries. Note that myself and the captain are each pitching our own ideas, so we'll end up with two possible lines of books. And listeners, you decide which books you'd really want to read, and we'll play that game as well. We'll have enough money to buy one title from the other editor's line. Better take notes here. Okay. So tell me, did you have a strategy? It sounds like you had a sort of overarching concept going into this.
Yeah, and I have to say, as a listener, sometimes I think the overarching concepts can be limiting. So I usually, not always, prefer when people are eclectic about it and just go all over the place with what each character makes them think of. But I latched on to one character, came up with a concept, and basically went 100% or 180 degrees out from what I usually like.
Okay. So this isn't like a line of books that you would really want to read yourself, but you think readers will.
Well, I'm hoping that it would be an exception to, like, the new universe is a concept in and of it unto itself. And for most people, I think that's a bad example, right? But we can also think of a lot of good examples. So I'm hoping this is one of the good ones.
Okay. For myself, this character suggested a theme, and then that character suggested a different theme, but there wasn't a theme for me that I could fit to every character. It's a little bit all over the place. Which is a good place to be for a comic book line, you know, something for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
With issue 5 of Who's Who Update 87, we have to include a minimum of 9 books in our line and a maximum of 11. I'm going to hand it off to you first, and we'll do a bit of back and forth in entry order, but we'll keep our 2 bonus series for the end if we have them. And we start with The Reaper As Gotham's former vigilante, I decided to lump him in with the heroes, and I hope you agree.
Well, not exactly a hero in my version, but I did include the Reaper. This is going to be my longest description because this is also the setup for the entire scenario of my overarching concept. So the issue that spawned the scenario is Green Lantern Volume 2, Number 8 from 1962. Once upon a time, in the year AD 5700, Earth will be under threat from an army of evolved Gila monsters, as happens from time to time. The authoritarian solar council of that time that rules Earth will try to pick a solar director to lead them through this mess. But none of their candidates for dictator slash savior seemed qualified, so they looked back into the past. They plucked Hal Jordan from 1961, messed with his brain to make him think he was a local named Paul Manning, issued him a girlfriend from the Solar Council membership, and let him save the day. This sort of highly questionable Silver Age activity happened a few more times. Eventually, because the brain damage from all this was starting to build up for poor old Hal, the Solar Council remade another Green Lantern into Paul Manning. More on that GL later. In my line of comics, the 58th century Earth is in trouble again. This time, the threat is a marauding space armada from across the universe bearing down on them and on all the planets associated with them. Think the Legion's United Planets, but it's 28 centuries later, and now they're in kind of a loose confederation. We'll call the Allied Planets. The Marauders are an army of conquering aliens, and conquered aliens. They've been remade, most of them, into cyborg automatons. Some became the officers of their shadowy empire, so they still have their minds. Their intent is not to rule, but to slaughter and plunder and despoil. They take the resources they need from the planets they conquer and destroy the rest so their victims can't rise again and come after them. In that sense, they're like the aliens from the movie Independence Day. They reap where they have not sown, so they are known as the Reapers. The comic that tells their story shows the Machiavellian machinations between the officers of the ruling council as they compete for power and even to take the throne. Some of them regret their decision to join the Reapers, and we see the decisions those regrets lead them to make. Reader also gets to see the battles that play out from both sides, because the stories in the heroic comics will tell the other side of the Reapers' stories.
I once tried that, you know, like doing like 28th century or something. I mean, you can reinvent anything when you do that.
Yes. I'm giving the writers a lot of work to do. How about you?
Yeah. Everything's contemporary era for me. There's a new Reaper in Gotham City. He's a brutal vigilante in the style of Skull Digger from Jeff Lemire's Black Hammer comics, kind of who I visualized. And in the first story arc, he's going to encounter his idol, the Batman, who chases him out of town naturally. So that's where it begins, across America, maybe even a globetrotting adventure to places that aren't a good fit for his activities. Either it's too small a town for him to stay there long, or the native heroes don't want him there. Grim and gritty like Punisher, but also a black comedy that mocks the anti-hero craze by consistently dumping on the character.
I like it. I might be a little too sympathetic toward him, but I'm sure you can fix that with his personality.
Well, I mean, maybe he is sympathetic. I mean, the best series are he's sympathetic, but also, you know, kind of a loser in a way. Anyway, next up is the Rocket Red Brigade. So I only care about one Rocket Red. That's Dimitri.
Yep.
From the Justice League. But time has moved on, and his kids are old enough to wear their own armors. So this book is called Rocket Reds, plural, and I make it a warm family dramedy. But, and this may be controversial, probably is, it's set in the war in Ukraine.
Oh, wow.
After Justice League Europe, Dimitri fully defects to the West with his family. He got some old brigade armors left over after the USSR fell, cannibalized the Apocalypsian suit, to build his kids their own armor. Each armor would have different capabilities and so on. And Mom is the woman in the chair. So after Russia attacks Ukraine, they have a long talk and they decide to head over there to fight the Russians, which they think is the right thing to do. But the adults also feel torn about it. So we're contrasting the gentle humor of the family situation with the real hard facts about war and global politics with some old Russian friends from comics probably entering the fray to make things more complicated for the Rockets. So yeah, this is probably so controversial, too tapped into current events, which means it can only exist on this show.
Wow. Okay. DC might not publish it, but I could see an independent comic company doing it. I love it. not to tell you your job, but I would make the Dimitri's wife ethnically Ukrainian just to give her more of a personal stake in it, because that sort of thing would happen, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know what from which province Dimitri comes from or what, you know? It's like, I didn't think to research that. Maybe I should have. It's not like, we know Colossus is Ukrainian, for example.
Oh, right? Yeah. That's right. I'd forgotten that.
So anyway, yeah, I agree with you. I think that's a good tip as well. But your guys are obviously, your brigade is going to be out in the future somewhere.
Yeah, they're in the 58th century and they are getting ready to fight the onslaught of the Reapers. And so the timeline for this scenario is going to be, for the first part of it, you're going to know the Reapers are coming and everybody is training and getting ready. And then you'll move into the actual war as they hit the perimeter of the Allied planets and start moving in. For the Rocket Red Brigade in particular, the Solar Council knows that for this threat, they need more than a kidnapped Green Lantern to save them. So they come up with a number of other options. One of those, and probably the biggest one, is the Rocket Red Brigade. Biggest in actual number of people. Inspired by their Soviet and Russian predecessors in our time, the Rocket Red Brigade is kind of a 58th century version of the U.S. Army's 75th Ranger Regiment. They're shock troops. They conduct special reconnaissance and direct action raids on high-value targets with the hope that by hitting those targets, they can turn the tide of the war. They've got genetic modifications, powered armor, and arduous training. It's a regiment of about 3,500 men and women. The stories will vary as readers will visit a few of the troops across a variety of specialties in each issue. Think something like visiting different parts of the G.I. Joe team, and they'll occasionally visit the command staff too. And sometimes the spotlight will be on one Rocket Red who's trying to survive and accomplish his mission.
Yeah. You know, I knew that's what was going to happen. Once I knew the war set up with the Reavers, I thought, yeah, okay. This is going to be like their opposite number in many ways.
Yeah. Well, that's why I said you may not find this very creative. I'm obviously drawing on my background as a veteran. And some of these, it's like as soon as you know the scenario, the rest of it kind of falls into place.
But maybe not. Well, we'll see what. Well, this one's going to be the Green Lantern one, right? Salak.
Yes. Since he's the only GL in this issue of Who's Who update, he's obviously the second GL who became Paul Manning in the 58th century. So this time it was in Green Lantern Corps number 215, so it was fully into post-crisis continuity. So my first thought upon receiving this assignment was to do something different with him, not what I'm about to tell you. So in real DC Comics continuity, he was literally the keeper of the Book of Oa, which is the book of lore and regulations for the Green Lantern. So he's usually been portrayed as a by-the-book guy. He believes in the wisdom and righteousness of the Guardians of the Universe. And you know, and you've seen that arc change over the history of the Corps since the 80s. I wanted to shove Salak into our morally ambiguous world. So I wanted to have some Guardians rewrite the Book of Oa to change what people believe about history so they could justify some nefarious plan. Well, they'd assume Salak would go along because they see him as a mindless lapdog. But he'd realize they were wrong, go rogue, make alliances with shady characters for the greater good, and have, you know, this dramatic character growth. Then I thought, that seems really obvious. Maybe somebody else has done this before. And yes, it's totally been done before. So I had to abandon that plan. But then I remembered the Paul Manning connection. So he remained the linchpin for my comics line, which he was kind of always going to be. I always liked this character. In the original post-crisis continuity, he finds out who he really is and stays in the 58th century anyway. And the Green Lantern Corps are remembered in that time, but they're mysteriously absent, so he goes looking for them. I'm going to do the same thing, but in my line, the Reapers are the impetus for all of that. So when the Reapers are still on their way, the Solar Council decides they need Salak at his very best, so they undo his mind whammy. Salak knows he needs the core to defend against the Reapers, so he goes looking for them, and he has adventures all across the 58th century DC universe in the process. There will be fan service Easter eggs galore, because I'm silly enough to love that kind of thing. He finds that what happened to the core is wrapped up in the identity of the Emperor of the Reapers and in their history. And of course, the core will be reborn and come in at the end like Gandalf and the Great Eagles at the Battle of the Five Armies. So I'd probably have Jeremy Adams write this, but I considered Jeff Johns, despite the fact that I've complained about him over the years. If I went with him, I'd just have to be a strong editor to combat his tendency to fridge characters and turn things into ongoing horror stories. So how about you?
Yeah, you're giving yourself a big job there if if you're using Johns over Adams. This is one of the themes I was exploring that maybe I would have used across everything, but it didn't work. When I was a teenager, we didn't have consistent access to games to a game store that would support our role-playing hobby. So we homebrewed RPGs in genres other than D&D. And one of these was a short-run space opera game run by my friend and tormentor, Rob Tam. Shout out to Rob. In which I played, well, I played Salak, basically. So he looked like Salak. He was called Salak. He just wasn't a lantern. So that's the inspiration here for this Green Lantern series, where Salak is the main guy, and he uses his ring to create an emerald starship. He crews it with aliens from across the DC universe, with a focus on aliens that have Green Lanterns in the core, basically. And he patrols his sector with it. Star Trek meets Green Lantern meets, thanks to the Alien Perspectives, Becky Chambers' Wayfarers series, which I strongly recommend. So I don't think there'd be like any humans in this series, basically. But it would be like part space opera, part superhero.
That sounds fascinating because, you know, we see so many different alien races in the Green Lantern Corps. And for most of them, we never get to see the rest. Like, that's the only representative we get to see. And I would love to see, you know, where Chase Alon and the guy who looks like a big vegetable and, you know, and all these other, what all these other races look like and or how they...
The crystal guy and, you know. Yeah, anyway, we get a sense of their culture and biology and, you know, Star Trek it up a bit.
Yeah, cool.
All right, next up is Superboy. That's our one big name.
Yes.
Superboy. It says revised on the comic, doesn't it? I believe that's a mistake.
Yeah.
He's not really Superman now revised and he's not... there's no Superboy in the original Who's Who series. So Superboy, well, I think it should be Superman as a boy, just like Mark Waid is writing in Action Comics today, except focused on introducing the Legion of Superheroes until the book becomes Superboy starring the Legion of Superheroes, and then Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes, and finally just Legion of Superheroes. That happened before and it can happen again. I'll make it happen.
Outstanding.
As a Legion fan, I have to do this, but in reality, I'm not. You know, it's basically what Action Comics is doing today.
Cool.
Simple.
That sounds great. So my whole line is about impending doom followed by war, so we need some fun. And one of the books that that I'm going to try and make more fun is Superboy. I'm thinking the All Reds and Mark Waid as the main creative team. So in that sense, at least, I think we're thinking similarly. As we know from the DC 1 million event and many other stories, there will always be a Superman family in the DC universe. The Superboy book will be about the Superboy of the 58th century. So with Green Lantern off on his quest, the Solar Council turns to Superboy as kind of a Captain America for the current war. He'll be leading special missions and inspiring the people as a symbol. Unfortunately, the Superboy of the 58th century may be young, but he grew up indoctrinated in the idea of truth, justice, and the American way in the best possible sense of that phrase. So he inspires the people everywhere he goes just as planned, but he's inspiring them to more than just fighting for the motherlands. He's fighting for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, or as he sometimes calls it, finding your joy. That's obviously threatening to the ruling Solar Junta, because they like to kidnap people and mess with their brains. But it's a dilemma because he's popular and they need him to win, and they're not sure they could stop him if they tried. He's part human, so his Superman powers are somewhat diluted, but he also has some of the extra powers that Morrison told us the House of El would pick up along the way. So we'll find out about those as we go. As in Green Lantern, we'll also get to see the worlds and alien races of the DC Universe 2,700 years after the Legion of Superheroes. We're going to have some drop-in issues from Matt Fraction and a series of guest artists who will write the tales of Superboys in other eras. And those stories will have consequences that tie into the main book. That part is inspired by what Matt Fraction did with the Immortal Iron Fist.
I mean, I love that series, so you had me at hello. Strong contender. Love the character, love the vision. We'll see if my money stays on that character. Next up is Vanguard, the Vanguard. Like, I don't know if Marv Wolfman was trying to recreate the Omega Men or something, but aside from being background in an issue of Batman Superman, these guys only ever appeared in a new Teen Titans annual. Even that didn't have a whole lot of information, like backstory.
Yeah.
So I have the issue. I have the tales of the Teen Titans, or the reprint. So I knew these guys. They never showed up again, even though I had like something of an interest in them from that first appearance. But I'm guessing these are among the ones that you said, well, I've never heard of these guys.
That is 100% correct.
Fly free.
All right. Yeah, I only knew what was written in Who's Who. And what I saw in Who's Who was they were this awesomely overpowered team of alien heroes that, like you said, appeared with Superman and the Teen Titans and the Teen Titans annual. So I thought seriously about going for something like a DC version of Guardians of the Galaxy with the descendant version of the original Vanguard. But then I looked a little bit more into the name. So a Vanguard is originally a military unit that goes in front and leads the way in the same way that avant-garde leads the way in culture, right? My Vanguard will be modeled after a U.S. Army Special Forces team. So the Special Forces, also known as the Green Berets, their motto is De Oppressu Liber, to liberate from oppression. So they work very well for my scenario. They're cross-trained in the skills of multiple military specialties, so they can be versatile and highly capable despite being only about a dozen people. The Vanguard will be different from, you know, real Army Special Forces because they'll have superpowers, but they'll be doing what Green Berets do better than any other special operations force. They'll go behind enemy lines into the planets the Reapers are pillaging or the ones that they're about to. They will rapidly develop an understanding of local conditions, build rapport with the people, and raise a resistance force. Sometimes they'll just be training, equipping, and fighting alongside a resistance force that's already there. The Reapers will have to divert resources to crush the rebellions. There'll be moral dilemmas for the Vanguard because they could be setting people up to be slaughtered, but they know that without resisting, those people will probably die anyway, and at least this way they die with some agency. But they also hope that some of these, you know, these planets and these races will survive. So they're also thinking about the post-war era and setting up conditions and leaders for the reconstruction and worrying over, you know, if I go with this guy who's an effective resistance leader, am I just setting up the next dictator of this planet and potentially the next threat? And you'll have a variety of team members with a variety of powers and perspectives on the issues they're dealing with.
Any of these six survive the transition?
No, although I have considered, by the six, you mean the original Vanguard?
Yeah, in the entry, yeah.
Yeah, I did consider going with an homage as like making them the descendants of those original Vanguard. I guess now that you put it, I mean, these could be long-lived aliens. I could go with some of the original. I hadn't thought about that. I'll have to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah, and there's been a couple of crises since then. So who knows if they exist? They could be transplanted. My concept has nothing to do with them, but similar to you, I went to the definition of the word to inspire myself because I'm already doing a sort of space opera heroes thing with the Green Lantern. In this case, I'm repurposing their name and nothing else really for Earth heroes. So since the Vanguard is the foremost part of an advancing army or naval force, etc., I'm thinking this is going to be a defense force against alien invasion, which is pretty common for Earth.
Yep.
The superheroes have tractored an old JLA satellite to the edge of Earth space. Like imagine there's maybe a Lagrange point between the moon and Mars or something around there. And anyway, it's got to be international and will include members of our own various sapient species. So there has to be an Atlantean, there's a Federan, there's a Homo Magi. And it's kind of a sitcom about people living on a space station and driving each other crazy between invasions. But there's also, of course, invasion action pulling from DC history. Lots of reattempts by known and obscure aliens. We're going to have fun with it. So I see it mostly as a comedy.
Well, this sounds like Space JLI.
Space JLI, okay.
And I say that as a compliment.
But without any other characters, like they'd be all new characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Essentially.
No, but I mean, same tone, which I mean, I've been thinking about comedy a lot lately as part of prep for another podcast. And I really like comedies with a plot where there's something going on, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine or MASH, where it's like you could easily make a drama about these things, about these scenarios. Mm-hmm. But you're showing the comedy that's inherent in the situation. So, and JLI was in the same vein as that. So, yeah, I think this one's a strong contender for me.
Speaking of comedy, not necessarily, but Vibe is next. Vibe, the great forgotten Justice League member who should have been in Who's Who, the original series, and was completely forgotten, absurdly. Here he is. And I think Geoff Johns, you mentioned him earlier, he blew the character wide open when he connected the vibrations with those of the Flash. Mm-hmm. Essentially, and he connected the powers to the multiverse in that, I think, maybe 12 issues series, as it turned out to be. So I would do something very similar, and I turn Vibe into the Kid Eternity of the multiverse, which is to say he can call up guest stars from other Earths to help him protect Detroit. So it's a team-up book, With the naughty twist, that vibe is always billed second on the cover. So I love team-up books. We know this.
It's a way to further dump on the character. Okay.
Well, it's a dump and not. You know, I think everybody's always teaming up with Vibe, but it would be, we have many Earths. Now it's now an unlimited number of Earths to work from. He calls somebody up. That person is named on the cover. And it can be crazy and silly, like having Captain Carrot or something, just like it can be darker. There's plenty of dark worlds. There's a whole dark multiverse out there, apparently. So that's what I'm doing with Vibe.
That sounds great. I'm not one of the, it's dangerous to say this on the Fire and Water Network because of one of the co-founders, but I'm not one of those people who gravitated to Justice League Detroit. Never had anything against any of the particular characters, but this sounds like the best treatment of Vibe I've heard.
I mean, hopefully it's fun. And for the record, I do like the characters from Justice League Detroit and et cetera. I just don't think it worked out in a way that is a Justice League book.
Yeah.
So that's its main sin, is that it doesn't feel like the Justice League.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, what are you doing with it?
Well, so this is one of the ones where I gender swapped. So Vibe is a one-woman psychological operations team. Using her array of superpowers, but especially her telepathy and shape-changing, she will infiltrate the threatened planets and get to know the inhabitants on a person-to-person level. She'll discern what's important to their societies, gauge their morale, and build resilience in the population. So she will undermine the resolve of those who are fooled by the Reapers into collaborating. Her telepathy won't be enough because people have to see to truly believe. So she'll be showing them ways that they can survive and win. And they'll start to believe in the messages that she's communicating to them. She'll do what she can to market the war to inspire people not to give up hope and fight back. Sometimes that will mean building support for a solar council she doesn't believe in. Sometimes she'll act as a vanguard for the vanguard because she'll be finding the places that are ripe for a resistance movement. The twist ending at the end of the first issue will be finding out that she's actually Miss Martian. As she works, her side project will be finding clues to the whereabouts of her missing uncle. So, of course, that'll come into play, too.
Interesting and a fun character to bring back. I like it when you use the future, but some people are so long lived or something happened that pushed them forward. That always helps the connection, the connecting universe. All right. Well, it only gets more obscure. The Watchmen? Yeah. What is this?
I have no idea who these people are.
It's always tough because of the controversy between Alan Moore and DC about what we're going to do as editors. But since you have your own little backyard to play with, I imagine we're free and clear of Alan Moore's concepts.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully he won't be mad about anything but the name. I'm sure you remember people had a lot of funny ideas about what we could do with the Watchmen. Somebody came up with the Red Circle characters and converting those the way that DC converted the Charlton characters. But there were a lot of others. I went a different route. The Watchmen are the team of heroes that Salak leaves behind to protect the Earth and the closest planets. So they're the last line of defense. Their comic comes out late in the game because the Solar Council is holding them in reserve as they train and develop their powers. Up until the threat becomes very close, you're seeing them in, you know, subplots in other stories. Maybe you're seeing the Solar Council mention the work that's being done with them, but they're not leading anything. So finally, when tension is really high and they've been itching to get in the fight the whole time, you see them come in. And their leader is going to be Paul Manning's main squeeze, who is Solar Council member Iona Vane. She is losing faith in her Solar Council, but she believes in her man and his cause. She won't let him or her people down. The Watchmen's code names are all inspired by heroes from our era. The Time Master, the Red Hood, Spectre, Aquaman, Bronze Tiger, and Halo, among others. I'll let the writer figure out the rest.
You know, I went even further than you did in terms of respecting Alan Moore. Because when I pitched the Minutemen, I said I didn't want to compound DC's betrayal of Alan Moore. So I turned them back into Charlton characters. So I can't very well use the Watchmen as is either. I'm even not going to use the name. I'm calling them The Watch.
Cool.
And this is about the question, operating a conspiracy battling network. Several questions, actually. So we have Vic Sage is the leader at the base, prominent because he's the inspiration for Rorschach. But Renee Montoya's question is field leader. She's executing missions, and we have a team. I'm still keeping a Charlton connection. So there would be a heroic version of the Ghost. Ted Kord as scientific advisor, the modern judo master who was introduced in Checkmate. I would bring in some Charltonites that have never been adapted by DC Comics before, like the Banshee, Gunmaster, the Shape, this would be fun. Professor Coffin, who I think was just a horror host, but still, let's make something of that. And this is meant to be a wild, illuminated Illuminati book full of obscure characters that are reimagined for the 21st century.
I always like those characters, so I'd be very interested in seeing what you do with them.
Yeah, me too. So, not me, a writer.
Right.
Then we have Wild Dog. This is one that almost fell into my RPG theme, basically. When we were regularly playing Hong Kong Action Theater, I created a scenario that was basically Shaolin Soccer for hockey. We called it Pucks of Fury. It was a blast. So that's the aesthetic I see for Wild Dog. So he's a small town vigilante, sure. But instead of getting a football injury and, you know, whatever this backstory here, he's a small town hockey player who plays the perfect game. And then that unlocks his hockey chi. He hears the call of the ice. Think of it as the green, but for, you know, frozen water. And it gives him his mission and his abilities. He might be imagining some of this, who knows? But I see Wild Dog skating into action, making every surface slippery, dropping his gloves to beat on criminals, and so on. Eventually, this blooms into a team book. You don't play hockey alone. With evil hockey rivals. I think it probably has to look a bit manga, if I'm honest. That's really the vibe here, the sort of sports manga with powers. I mean, Wild Dog's look screams hockey to me. So I made it... I made it that. Like, let's put him up in one of those in Minnesota or, Nebraska or one of those northern, or make him Canadian even. That would work as well.
Yeah, make him Canadian. So Wild Dog is officially the hero that I had the most trouble with, because I thought about just having him be this equivalent of Wild Man in Sergeant Rock's Easy Company, but for the 58th century, or maybe the Viking Commando going out and laying waste to the enemy. But that wasn't interesting even to me. It was just, we've seen that lots and lots of times before. And I still need more fun in my comic line of impending doom. So who is an actual dog in the DC universe? And then I thought about Nort. Nort in the 21st century is interested in where Salak has disappeared off to, and tracks him down like the good bloodhound that he is, and finds Salak, or at least where he's supposed to be. But then he finds out that he's in the situation where the Reapers are bearing down on Earth, and he's got to do something to help them. He doesn't want to steal Salak's thunder as the Green Lantern of the 58th century, so he comes up with a new persona designed to strike terror in the hearts of his enemies. Wild Dog. And this book is a comedy. He goes out and he is an effective fighter against the Reapers, but when they come face to face with him and realize, you know, just what they've been afraid of, they completely drop their guard and are shocked, surprised, even a little miffed that this is what they've been scared of. But he uses that to his advantage.
That's ridiculous.
Yes.
I can't believe Nort is going to be part of this line. Okay, cool, cool. So I like all the comedy. Obviously, I'm doing a lot of comedy books as well. You know, that's really my groove. Probably because I grew up on Euro comics, which have a strong comedy bent, even when you're looking at adventure stuff. Next up is Windfall, formerly of the Masters of Disaster and later joined the Outsiders. Our one female lead, possibly. I know you're not using the true Windfall, but...
So I did not gender swap Windfall because, like you said, we needed the representation. Looking at the Who's Who update page may have been the first and only time I've seen Windfall, okay? So, I mean, I'm aware of the book she was in, but I wasn't following them in those times. My Windfall is an agent of the Allied Planets who is inside the Emperor's ruling council. So she was one of the people who collaborated and became one of the officers for the Emperor. Something happened that made her question her choices, and she started working for the other side. She sought out a way to make contact with them and kind of self-recruited as a secret agent for them. We'll find out her backstory over time. She's inspired by a real-life agent of CIA and MI6, a Soviet military intelligence colonel named Oleg Penkovsky from the 60s, who is his intelligence was key in helping us survive the Cuban Missile Crisis. Windfall is her cryptonym, the code word that she goes by in message traffic. It was randomly generated, but the people who receive her work come to see her name as prophetic because she is a windfall for their cause. The whole thing will have a Night Manager vibe. If you're familiar with that television show with Tom Hiddleston, what that means is that it will be super tense as she's trying to stay hidden while she is risking death to get the information and get it to her handlers. For this one, I'm thinking of Ed Brubaker and Alex Maleev on the creative team.
I love a good spy book.
Yeah.
In fact, I have spy books as well later on in this list. For me, it's a comedy series. Again, I guess.
Yeah.
It's called Supervillain High. So I didn't even give her the name on the, it's not a solo book per se.
Sure.
It's called Supervillain High, where the kids are basically teenage versions of C-list supervillains, and the teachers are A and B-list villains. So Luthor might be the principal, and Brainiac might teach math, and Harley Quinn is the counselor, you know. Our POV character is Windfall, SV High's newest freshman. She feels out of place, but she's trying to follow in her older sister's footsteps. That's New Wave from the Masters of Disaster. And like, New Wave is at this point a senior, as are the other Masters of Disaster. Windfall feels out of place because despite her family's wishes, she has the heart of a hero. Teen angst and hilarity ensue when she sees her first students from Superhero High at a sports event. And she falls for a cheerleader for that other team, a girl called Halo.
Oh, wow.
So obviously it's an alternate reality where, you know, it's a little bit Tiny Titans, but it's not pushed to that. Like, it's not a kiddie book. It's a teenage book. I think DC's kind of doing that kind of thing with their like graphic novels, like young adult graphic novels.
Yeah.
So it's in that vibe, but it's a monthly.
It reminds me a little bit of what's going on now in Starfleet Academy, where they've got, you know, the cadet in the war college and the cadet in the academy that are interested in each other, despite being from rival gangs, basically.
I wrote this blurb before that happened on Starfleet Academy,
yeah.
But Starfleet Academy is definitely something I had in mind when I wrote the first blurb.
Oh, cool.
We're up to our bonus entries. So first up is our opportunity to do a revised entry. And so we can choose, here's the list that we could choose from: Rip Hunter, Jason Todd, Spectre, Suicide Squad, and I would allow Aquaman, Bronze Tiger, and Halo, whose revisions are just costumes. And for me, it had to be the Suicide Squad. And I want it to be the Ostrander version, pre-issue 40, before they went civilian clothes, etc. So Amanda Waller would still be a beep, but she's on the side of the Angels, unlike her current portrayal. Captain Boomerang, you got Deadshot, Bronze Tiger, Nightshade, you know, this group. And all the contemporary villains who appear in this issue have to go on a mission, not together, but, you know, sequentially over the first year, let's say. So let's play a little game, Cap. I'll name a villain, and you say if you think they die, survive, or more than survive, they actually join Task Force X for an extended time.
Okay.
All right, ready?
Yep.
We'd have Jack of the Royal Flush Gang.
Die.
Okay, I don't disagree. Shockwave.
Die.
Yeah, probably. Dr. Savannah.
Oh, survive. No, actually, no. He'll join Task Force X.
Oh, wow, join. Okay, that's interesting. Then there's each member of Strike Force Cobra.
Oh, okay.
So you can take them in bulk or, you know, so we have Clayface 4, Elemental Woman, Planet Master, Zebra Man, and Spectra Monster. Do any of these survive? Clayface, maybe.
Yeah, I was just going to say Clayface survives. And Clayface, I think, I was going to say maybe join Task Force X, but no, that's, I think, just survive to continue as a villain.
Okay. Then Twister, who actually did join the Suicide Squad at some point.
I'm going to say join Task Force X.
Okay. I think that's a better fate than was reserved for her. She did die on her mission.
Yeah.
In the real comics. And then finally, there's Ismala, who is a New Gods character that I never heard of.
Yeah, it was when they brought the New Gods into Warlord, so that was new to me too.
Yeah.
I'm kind of interested in what they did with it, so I may go back and read those. And I'm vamping because I'm trying to decide what would happen. I'm going to say, I think she's too tough to die. I'm going to say a villain.
I think you're right on all these counts. I just need that Suicide Squad back. I'm sorry. I have not been able to generate interest in later versions of the squad in the same way. So which of these revised entries did you pick to make a series out of?
Well, despite the difference in our scenarios, we seem to be pretty in sync on the Siskoid. I also picked the Suicide Squad. And if anybody goes back to listen to who I put in the Watchmen and played the elimination game, they could probably figure out that Suicide Squad was who was left. So my Suicide Squad obviously will be very different. And they are inspired by some real life Afghans, actually. So once upon a time, before I actually deployed to Afghanistan, I got to hear an Air Force NCO brief about his experiences there. And he was working with a special operations team who had formed a unit of Afghans that I think was entirely composed of people who had lost family members to the Taliban. The result was that their loyalty and zeal for the fight was unmatched. So that's what I thought of when I thought of the Suicide Squad, because you have, in this case, it's going to be people who survived the destruction of their races by the Reapers, and they are living with survivor guilt, and they don't really want to live with it. And so their intent is to die in battle against the Reapers, but they want to do so spectacularly and make a serious dent in the Reapers' war effort when they do. Then as they go, they develop relationships with one another and with the people that they're fighting alongside on, you know, on some of these different planets. And they start to question whether their intent to die is really what they ought to do with their lives. And are they dishonoring the memory of their people by continuing and building a life for themselves? So this is probably the darkest and most gut-wrenching of the books. But that was the story that I wanted some writer to tell.
I mean, you're taking it back to the origins of the Suicide Squad when it was, you know, when it was a war comic.
Yep, exactly.
That's strong. So we both went into like real life military action, and which would be maybe too controversial for DC Comics,
yeah,
in a way, but we're not beholden to that. So finally, you could take a villain entry and give that a book. Did you?
Yes, I did. And because I still have to reveal the identity of the Emperor.
Ah.
And so this is not going to be a book named after the actual entry in Who's Who Update 87, because I won't want to reveal it on the cover. It's just going to be the Emperor, and it's going to be a DC super special one shot. So that I'm trying to put these in everywhere in any podcast I'm on so that I can keep Paul Keen's podcast going forever.
Okay.
The one shot is going to be building up to the final battle that reveals the Emperor is actually Zimmer. And I hope I'm saying that correctly. It could be Zamir. What do you think?
I've always said Zamir. I'm not sure how, you know, maybe I didn't ever voice it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I thought it'd be like, oh no, it's like dark twist. It's Rip Hunter or something, but Zamir. Okay.
Yeah. For folks who don't know, like I didn't know, Zamir is the last full entry in the 87 Who's Who update, as you would expect alphabetically.
Yeah.
He's a long-lived high-tech slug-like alien who, and I'm quoting here, dissented from his race's official policy of gentle coexistence. They exiled him because he was conducting sadistic experiments on humans whom he considered to be lesser beings. He eventually formed a legion of supervillains, like you do when you're lonely, and he fought the legion of superheroes. In my line, he got tired of getting his butt kicked by superpowered fleas on this side of the universe, so he built the marauding empire far away from here. And now the Reaper army headed this direction is coming back for his revenge.
Okay. Well, yeah, even it could have been Starfinger. There's like a bunch of villains who could have fit the bill or have that name. He's a real twist.
Yeah. Even as a kid, I couldn't get past the name of Starfinger. That is not intimidating.
No, you're right. Especially this new second Starfinger is, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I picked Strike Force Cobra.
They at least have a very cool name.
Well, it's not going to be these goobers.
Okay.
Because, I mean, they're dying. We killed them in the Suicide Squad, remember?
Right.
It's a team book, but they're not on Cobra's side. Instead, it's more like the setup from the old 70s Cobra series, a team devoted to fighting Cobra around the world.
Nice.
Big super spy vibes here, as promised. Starring, of course, Cobra's twin brother, who has not, in this version, succumb to madness like he did in modern comics. And he's still using the codename Gemini. It's him, a mystic Randu Singh from the Demon comics, and Johnny Double. These are all characters who were in the Cobra comics pre-implosion. And then I would probably team them up with some of my favorites from Greg Rucka's Checkmate, Sasha Bordeaux, and the female Spy Smasher, and the new Mademoiselle Marie, because they also fought Cobra a great deal in that series. It's them, it's covert ops, it's working against this evil cult, which is also doing covert ops or terrorist activities. It's called Strike Force Cobra, which I think, you know, sounds really cool and I think would work as a book.
You're making my choice hard because I clearly have a penchant for small teams of commandos and spies. So, yeah, that sounds great.
I mean, there's a lot of teams and you did a lot of teams. I did a lot of teams. And usually on many of these episodes, it's been like, well, how can I get a team out of this?
I made a good guy, at least nominally, you know, anti-hero the Reaper, into bad guys, and you made Strike Force Cobra into good guys.
The balance is restored.
Yes.
So we're at the end of the show, and we have to follow the now well-established tradition that states that we only have enough money to buy one series from the other editor's line. You want me to go first, since I made it hard for you?
Yeah, please. I'll take your pity.
I mean, it was hard for me too, in the sense that, and obviously you're not the first person to do this, when there is this big overarching story, it's hard to pick a book because then you're missing chapters of the overall story.
Right.
That's why I had Superboy on my list, in the sense that it seemed a little more divorced from the larger story.
Yep.
So that would be a good book to pick up if I can only pick up one. But in the end, I went with Windfall.
Oh, awesome.
Which also seems like she's pretty solo and doing her own thing, and it's got its own vibe. I got to stop using that name in this issue, but I think that's the book I would want to read. It's the most super spy one, right?
Yeah, it is. And it does, I mean, part of the advantage of doing the overarching thing is I can have things tie in, like she'll be doing things that has an impact three books over, but you don't have to read that book. So I think you made a good choice.
If I were reading everything and instead I would answer the question, well, which book would be like the first one I read every week or every month? Out of these, it would probably be the Watchmen one, because I like legacies and how you would interpret legacies many, many centuries later. And like, it's like a version of that character, but more of a legacy of that character. That would probably be like my groove. But if I can only pick one and I'm not reading any of the others, it's Windfall.
All right. Awesome.
What about you?
You started off really strong with Rocket Red, and I really thought that might be the book because that story, that premise really hits home for me, the idea of kind of the military family and fighting for freedom and survival for the Ukrainian people. It might be a little too much, so like a little too emotionally hard-hitting. So I also thought about your last one there, obviously a strong contender with Strike Force Cobra. If confronted on the stands, I might still go with that one. But I think the one I'm going to go with, because I need more comedy in my life, is Vanguard.
Okay, I see it. You know, so when you do like so many different styles and stories, it's hard to judge on just the one basis, right? So
yeah,
I'll send you an issue of Vanguard when it's ready.
Outstanding. Thanks. I'll send you one of each of all my line, and you'll be the only one who ever sees them.
Thank you. So, dear listeners, it's time for you to go to fireandwaterpodcast.com. Tell us what you think. Would you read any of these books? And if you were in charge, what series would you offer using these characters? If you like this content, think about visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/FW podcasts, like Diablo Frank and Doug Adamson, who sponsor this show. I hope you had fun, Captain.
I absolutely did, both in the prep and the delivery. Thanks for this opportunity.
You want to mention anything else you're on that you're working on? Or
you might hear about me soon with Tim Price and Mike Acheson. And I really hope I'm not busting secrets by saying that. And there are always Long Box Crusade episodes in the can that are coming out, since they record approximately 5 years ahead. I don't even know when they're coming out.
Are you on a Further Adventures of Indiana Jones episode?
Yes, I am.
So am I. It'll come out sometime this year.
Okay. All right. Good. Good. No, I don't know if that will, if mine will or not. I've lost track.
So, all right. Thanks for trying this experiment with me. Until next time, who's editing?
We are.